This podcast is sponsored by Perspective Hockey Central. Hey, Coiler, do you have some more information on it?
Yeah, I do. Prospective Hockey Central is a mobile app service built with the purpose of simplifying the youth, junior, and college hockey scouting and recruiting process. Prospective Hockey Central provides North American hockey community with useful tools and resources for player promoting, organizing, scouting, and communicating all in one mobile app. Prospective Hockey Central will be available to download on Google Play and the App Store in December. For more information, visit www.prospectivehc.com or visit Prospective Hockey Central on Facebook or at Prospective HC on Twitter. The hockey community connects on Prospective Hockey Central.
Welcome to In the Wheelhouse, Episode 8. So we got a couple of people here and we got one new person because the aging veteran may have died. We're not sure what happened to him. So of course we got the Sniper. How's it going today, Sniper?
Pretty good. We got some good topics tonight.
All right. And the Coiler?
Yep, looking forward to getting right into it here. I'm talking about Gritty, right?
Oh, we're talking about Gritty, all right. And last but not least, the newest member of the podcast, the guy who always yells, "Shoot!" Shoot, how's it going today?
I only yell it on the power play. I'm glad to be here, boys.
You're that one guy in the 300 section in the top when there's like four people in the lane. Shoot it!
I'm the only reason Cody Ceci scored tonight, so.
There you go. So yeah, we got actually a pretty action-packed, filled podcast. This will be in honor of Alexander Ovechkin, number 8, the great 8 himself. I know Sniper is very happy about that.
Huge fan.
Huge fan. All right. So speaking of huge fan, let's get the top 3 out of the way first. So the top 3 of the week, number 1 is the Red Wings, who are currently streaking. They won 8 of the last 7 games.
8 of the last 7.
7 of the last 8 games.
There you go.
And they're looking pretty good because everyone thought they were just going to tank this year. They're going to finish last. They're doing much better.
I still think they're going to finish pretty close to last. I think this is just kind of a streak. Their young players are scoring. They got some speed, but sooner or later, I think it's just going to die.
Well, they ended up pumping Arizona the other night.
Yeah, but every team usually pumps Arizona.
No, they have one of the best save percentage teams. Mm-hmm. Like, they're one of the lower.
Every other year, people pump Arizona. It was bound to happen.
Yeah, and Jimmy Howard's been pretty good lately. You know, he's had a few strong games, and they've been getting some of their veteran guys back, especially on the blue line like Mike Green, so that's going to help them as well.
Hey, he's had 7 points since he's came back. So 7 points in 9 games. It's been great for my fantasy league.
Is Mike Green back to his former self in the Washington days?
I hope so.
Shoot, what do you think of Detroit's?
You know, they're a young team. There's no expectations. Yeah. You're going to run into times over the season where you have a young team. When we think they're supposed to lose, they don't understand that. So they're going to go out there night in and night out. They're going to beat teams that they shouldn't beat. But there's going to come a time where the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
Those teams that are supposed to beat them are going to beat them. And I think, like Sniper said, we're going to find the Red Wings in that lottery pick come the end of the year. But there's going to be times when those young teams always surprise us.
Just wait until Philip Zanina comes in, though.
Well, he's going to make the teams pay. But the only thing that's terrible about their future is who's their goalie of the future? They don't have any prospects in net.
No, they trade
away. Howard's just getting older.
Yeah, and they trade away Peter Mrazek, who...
Surprised you got that name right.
Yeah, no, former Ottawa 67. I should know this. But no, Mrazek was a solid goalie. There was nothing wrong with him. He's doing well right now. I think he plays for Philadelphia.
No, he's Carolina. And he's not
good. I'm thinking of Kelvin Pickard. Sorry. Kelvin Pickard's doing actually well in Philly. Yeah, I think he's
actually bottom of the list as well.
Well, Elliott's been pretty good, one loss, and an overtime loss.
Peter Mrazek's rocking an .880 save percentage and a goals against average of 2.76 in 8 starts.
I mean, when is he?
If you're looking at
Calvin Pickard, 3 losses, and he's lost twice in overtime.
And if you're looking at Calvin Pickard, it's a .865 save percentage and a 4.41 goals against average. So you're not a goalie scout at all.
No, not at all.
He is currently last in the league.
That's why I'm called a defensive liability.
Yes, you are.
That's why an .880 looks good to you.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, wow, this is a great goalie. So number 2 of the best of the week is David Pastrnak, who's currently age of 22 and has 17 goals in 18 games. This guy is on fire and he's still super young. Boston really panned out with this draft pick.
Yeah, I think it was 25th overall or it was bottom 20s. It's really panned out, and the cap hit they signed him to, it's 6.67. It's going to be a great cap hit.
And the thing in the last 5 games now, he's had 6 goals, so David Pastrnak working it on that first line with Bergeron and Marchand. We got someone licking someone in face-offs, and Pastrnak just lighting it up. Coyler, what do you think of Pastrnak's performance this year?
Oh, very impressive. Like you said, you know, that top line's one of the best in the NHL, and they're just clicking all around right now. So, yeah, it's really exciting to watch.
Honestly, I mean, that's probably the best line in hockey. I know there's people out there that will debate. Whoa. You've got the Colorado Avalanche, you've got the Buffalo Sabres. But when you look year over year, that's the line that produces the most. He went 25th overall in 2014, and he's already a top player in this league. He probably has one of the top five best contracts in the league as well. Okay. And people talk about $6.5 million being some comparable for some other RFAs. Long term, that's a steal for the Bruins. And that's what this team needed if they want to stay competitive.
Yeah, if they would have signed him this year, he's looking at $9, $10
million. Easily. Yeah. Easily.
And that line, I think it was last year, they went, it was 26 games or something without getting an even strength goal against. Like that line is just unbelievable.
I'm just surprised they didn't pick up Josh Hosang instead of him. Josh Hosang, this guy, let me tell you, he's a great player.
Are they in the same draft year?
Yeah, same draft year. He was 25th and Hosang was 28th.
Oh,
geez. Yeah, Hosang's really panned out well.
Hosang was supposed to be, I think he was supposed to be top 10. His attitude wasn't a pile of
garbage.
But he's
steaming garbage.
After looking stuff up today, though, Hosang's doing pretty good in the AHL. He's got, I think, 11 points in the last 7 games. So he's, after calling out Lou, he's kind of backed up his mouth a bit.
Well, it's the AHL.
But if he had kept his mouth shut,
he probably would
have gotten that call up today. Because the Islanders had a ton of injury trouble.
This guy can't keep his mouth shut. That's the problem. He doesn't know how.
Yeah.
No, but I feel like he's one of those kids that if he ended up on the right team, he could perform in the NHL.
I agree. He needs to go to a team like Chicago where the leadership group there will just kind of shut him up and say, like, that's no, you don't do that.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, jeez, hot. So last top three of the week goes to Mike Hoffman, who just set a Florida Panther record with 14 consecutive games with a point. Coyler, what do you think of Mike Hoffman so far as a Florida Panther, and has his wife been tweeting anyone?
Can't speak to the tweeting, but you know, he's looked really good there on that line with, I think it's Dadonov and Barkov. So, I mean, yeah, it's Florida, you know, since Longo's been back, they've been doing really well, and they're just, you know, helping them out with all that scoring. So, yeah, it's good to see. You know, it's too bad Ottawa got rid of him, but, you know, it's good to see him having success in Florida right now.
I mean, it's tough. I'm sure the San Jose Sharks are kicking themselves for dealing him off right now. But
San Jose got Carlson and Hoffman. It's like, well, it's about a problem here.
I think Mike Hoffman deserves credit, though. Like, this is a guy, when he left Ottawa, his stock couldn't have been lower. And he's gone into Florida. He's seemingly kept his head down. He's kept his girlfriend off Twitter. He started to perform, and he's performed the way I think a lot of people in Ottawa thought he could.
Yeah, he's a natural goal scorer. It's just his defensive play is lacking a lot. His give a bleep level on the back check is 0 to none. But this guy can shoot. But the problem was when he was with Ottawa is this guy couldn't hit the net. Every time he shot, he's going bar down, and it went 10 feet over the net. It's like, buddy, just put it like a couple inches off the ice.
I think everyone said he was hard to play with too. You never knew what he was going to do. You never knew where he was going.
Yeah.
Everyone just, you couldn't play with him. And apparently he's found some good chemistry with Barkov and Dadonov.
Yeah, and like Barkov is that like setup guy. So it's a good fit for Hoffman.
I think he's actually playing with Trocheck.
Trocheck? Vincent Trocheck?
I believe so.
Oh gosh. We'll look into that. But we'll continue here. Speaking of bad situations, Mike Hoffman, Erik Karlsson. Let's go to the worst of the week. So we'll start off with the LA Kings. The guy that Shoot always says, Rob Blake does not know how to run an NHL team. What do you think of that?
I mean, some people are great players, and sometimes that doesn't transition into the front office. Look at Wayne Gretzky. When he was behind the bench, it just didn't work.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Right now, if you're looking at the decisions that Rob Blake has made in Los Angeles, he does not have the tools. He's not Steve Yzerman in the office. The trade he made this week makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't think the team doesn't get younger. Yeah, they get faster, but when you have one fast player playing with two boat anchors, he's going to pull everyone else down.
Is Pearson really that slow, though? Like, I don't know. He's not probably as fast as Hagelin, but Is he like someone slow like Dustin Brown or?
I think the worst part is we know what Carl Hagelin is. We don't know who Tanner Pearson is.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the hardest thing for me to understand in this trade.
Because if he starts playing with Crosby and he gets 25 goals this year, he's going to make, like, Rob Blake should be fired after that. Because Carl Hagelin topped out at his max 17 goals. I think that was 5 years ago, and that is his max. Like, he's not getting higher. Tanner Pearson had, I think, 24 goals 1 year, and he does have a high ceiling.
Well, the thing with LA right now is, like, what are you guys doing? You guys have a very, very slow team, an old team, and you just signed, what's his face?
Kovalchuk. 3 years, 6.5. Bet you he's kicking himself in the nuts right now.
They have Kopitar signed right now, who's...
for another 7 years at $10 million.
What's going on with Kopitar? It's like, he's just not showing up lately.
He's just old and slow. Like, last year, I think, was just an anomaly that he had a bounce back. He's a good player. He's got great hands. He's got a great two-way game, but... I think you need someone really good to play with who's quick. But
is that a Jonathan Quick joke?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
I mean, it's Dustin Brown as well. I mean, last year's bounce back season by Dustin Brown was probably the worst thing that could have happened to the LA Kings.
Yep.
Because now they felt, for whatever reason, they had a player, and Dustin Brown's showing this year that it's not there.
They felt that they were a competitor again. All their players had like set the ceiling high. It was just like the Vegas Golden Knights. All their players had above expectation seasons, and all of a sudden, they're a competitor, and they kind of went away from what they should have been going towards.
Like, their team is slow. If you just go through their lineup, let's talk about all these, like, dead weights. You got Nate Thompson, Kyle Clifford, Matt Luff, Dion Phaneuf, Alex Martinez, Jake Muzzin. Like, just...
In my opinion, I don't mind their defense. I think they got a decent defense core, but... I think there's only so much a defense can do.
But
and their scoring has been... Nana has been there, I mean...
Exactly. Like if your team's not scoring, then you're not getting momentum, and there's only so much a defenseman can do, especially when the goalie can't make a save either. Quick's gone, and Jack Campbell is not a starting goalie. I don't even think he's a backup goalie. So, there's just not much the team can do.
No, exactly. And it's going to be a tough year for LA Kings. I think the next 5 years is going to be very, very tough for the LA Kings because they need to blow that up.
Well, I think they should start making a trade with the Leafs.
Why?
Send Doughty to the Leafs, get back Nylander, get back a shit ton of prospects that they do have.
And the thing for me with LA, they traded for Ben Bishop a couple years ago at the trade deadline because they didn't trust the health of Jonathan Quick. They didn't think Jonathan Quick was durable enough to potentially stay healthy, but they've done nothing to shore up that position since. Mm-hmm. They let Ben Bishop walk that summer. They're a team that seems to think for right now, but they should be looking at 3 years down the road.
No, but they might as well just, like, their stars are old. Yeah. Their entire team is old. They don't have that many top grade A prospects. I think it's time to just trade Kopitar, trade Doughty, trade Quick, bring in what you can.
Yeah, because that's what the Rangers did. They just blew it up. They got a bunch of picks. I'm sure now that Vasilevskiy's hurt that the Tampa Bay Lightning will trade for Lundqvist somehow because the whole...
Yeah, they're taking on the Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. They just slowly engulfed into the Rangers. Let's move on to the second worst of the week is Uber. Who all saw the Uber video? Everyone else has seen it by now.
I think everyone's seen it.
Oh, yeah. We were the only Facebook page to share it directly to Facebook.
Oh, really? Eh?
We were, yeah.
So what do you guys think of this Uber video? I'm just going to give my opinion first. Everyone does it. Everyone talks smack about their boss. Everyone does that. And it's just so happy to be filmed. Like, it wasn't, like, that bad. He's looking at the stats. He's like, man, we're, like, 27th in the league. Which also goes to an issue with, what is his name, Raymond? Or?
Their coach.
Yeah, their special teams coach.
Their special team coach who last year led them to one of the worst power plays in the whole entire NHL and now is leading the penalty kill. And now they're the worst penalty kill in the NHL.
When that video was made, they had the worst penalty kill and the worst power play.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I agree with you that everyone does it. It's not a surprise. And if that coach wasn't named, I think there probably wouldn't even been an issue.
No, that's exactly right. Because they're right, though. They're looking at the stats. They're just talking about it.
Stats don't lie.
It's just what boys do. They're in the car. They're just looking at the stats. They're seeing what's going on. Coiler, what do you think?
No, I agree with you guys. Just, I guess, as a professional players, I mean, they're always potentially going to be filling on your right. I mean, if...
Hold on. We just got Mike Babcock here. Continue.
No, I mean, it's, you know, like you guys said, it's, I mean, people are bound to talk, players are bound to talk, you know, and all is going to see the same as the coach. And but, you know, in this case, they happen to be filmed and they posted it. So, I mean, it's, I think they've sort of said that they've had already put it behind them. They've already dealt with it and they've moved forward. So
yeah, because they, I think they dealt with it before the video has actually gone viral, I guess. Yeah, you can
apparently,
say.
Apparently they had it before it went to the Citizen.
Yeah. Shooter, what do you think of it?
I mean, I'm just looking at some stats here. I mean, 67.2% on the penalty kill.
Whoa.
I mean, it, I'm like sure there's AHL teams with better structures that could put up better numbers in the NHL. I think the thing that stuck with me and resonated with me from the video was Matt Duchene, somebody who you look at as a veteran guy on this team, speaking like that with someone like Thomas Chabot in the car. When it comes down to the legality of the video and things like that, I think it was definitely an invasion of their privacy. But as a leader in that group and somebody who's an unrestricted free agent this summer, how are you speaking like that openly in front of the rookies on this team when you want to be the guy in the room?
Well,
I mean, that can't be a great negotiating tactic for his agent.
And one thing is from the stigmatism that came around with Colorado with him is he was a bit of a cancer in the locker room. Mm-hmm. He did this exact kind of stuff which ruined Colorado in a sense. That's just rumors that we don't know what actually happened. He could have been a great guy for all we know.
I've actually heard tons of stories from when Duchene was in junior and even his draft year. I mean, at some point, you can hear these things about somebody. A video like that shows you that these are probably true. And it's unfortunate, but I honestly hope that the Senators can rectify this and they can find a way. I mean, they've got to make some changes. That percentage is obvious. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Matt Duchene's contract year goes because there's more than just stats now.
Yeah,
I don't think he's staying in Ottawa, though. I think it's a done deal. He's gone. And I think it'd be smart to let him go. They're rebuilding. Time to rebuild.
But as a playoff team, do you bring in a Matt Duchene? If you look at the results of the Colorado Avalanche when he left that team.
That's true, but I feel like any player that can make Team Canada deserves to be brought in for a playoff run.
Yeah, the guy has unreal hands. But I'm just going to go to baseball here. The LA Dodgers brought in...
Manny Machado.
Machado. And the year before that, who's the Asian guy? Texas.
Darvish.
Yu Darvish. And every year they brought in these new guys. It just ruined the chemistry of the team. And
well, they were talking about his lack of hustle there in Machado. So, I mean, who knows if that was...
Sorry, going baseball for a second here. But did you see Machado had an Orioles shirt underneath his LA Dodgers jersey?
I heard it was a Yankees jersey.
Oh my gosh.
No, I think you're right. A guy like Matt Duchene, you take a chance as long as you're not giving up a roster player.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. Like, if someone's going to trade a key piece to get a piece they think is better, I think it actually kind of works the other way because that guy was good. He had the chemistry, and you bring in someone who doesn't have chemistry. And if you're going to trade for him, I think it's got to be picks, not or prospects, not a roster player. And I wouldn't bring him in as he has to be your first line center. I'd bring him in as like a secondary role just so all the pressure's not on him right away.
Absolutely.
I think he's going to sign with Ottawa personally.
You've been saying that all year long.
Just let it play out.
You thought they're going to be a playoff team this year.
Hey, you never know. There's still lots of time left, and everyone's pretty close. I think like it's only like a 3-win difference from first.
They've been better than expected, for sure.
So the Montreal Canadiens.
Again, like you look at Ottawa's blue line, it looked terrible. But you got Thomas Chabot lighting it up, who's leading, well, Morgan Riley's now the points leader, I think, in defenseman, but...
I think Morgan Riley's points leader in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken.
That's Rantanen. Rantanen's, like, blowing it away at the moment. He's up to 27 points.
Yeah, but Ottawa's going to have a lot of difficulties this year with their blue line, because they are very young. Yep. They're going to make mistakes, which is, like, a given, but they could make the playoffs. You never know. Some crazier stuff has happened. Like, remember that Hamburglar run that Ottawa had?
Yeah, where they're going to need that to make the playoffs.
Exactly.
And Anderson's being worked pretty hard right now. I mean, he's facing a lot of shots every game.
He's facing like 190 shots a game. But I think that goes to Guy Boucher's system where they always give up that many shots.
If I'm redoing the Sens, I'm getting rid of Boucher. I don't like his system.
Yeah. What's his name? Joel Quenneville's available.
I don't think he's dumb enough to come to Ottawa.
Yeah, I think Joel Quenneville's looking for an opportunity where he can
win.
He can get back in the playoffs real quick. But aren't the Sens still playing previous coaches, if I'm not mistaken? I think they're still playing Dave Cameron, Paul McLean.
Something I don't know. I think McLean
too.
Final year.
I think so too.
But I think it's the final year, so they're just running out the rest of the coaching staff and kind of seeing what we have from there. But I would say that Alan Vigneault might be a good fit for Ottawa. So he's from the Ottawa area, just across the bridge in Quebecsico. He's chartered with Ottawa, even though he played for the Rangers before. And like he's a nice guy. He's a great guy. You can't go wrong with Alan Vigneault. But yeah, so that's the second worst of the week is goes to Uber. Third is kind of a general statement in the NHL, I guess you can say. The third worst of the week is all the injuries this week and a little bit into last week, but I'm going to go through a list. It's going to be a long list. So this might take up the rest of the podcast reading all this, but first, we got Vasilevskiy, from Tampa Bay, the starting goalie, who's out with a
fractured foot.
We got PK Subban, who's out. We got Cam Fowler, who's getting reconstructive face surgery after deciding to play catch with his face with a puck. Crosby, day-to-day. Kuznetsov, day-to-day. TJ Oshie, day-to-day. Zdeno Chara, who might have a career-ending injury because of his size, age, and his knees.
The way that knee bent did not look natural.
I didn't see it. I'm going to have to take a look at that after.
Yeah, it is awful looking. Victor Arvidsson. We got Quick and Jonathan Quick and Campbell. Campbell's going for surgery. And
they both had the same injury.
Yeah.
Both tore their meniscus.
Holtby, Brendan Carlo, Holla.
Eric Holla.
Yeah, that was a gross
play.
Snapped his leg
it's
in
not
half.
Supposed, it's not supposed to go
have
that
Have they
way.
Confirmed that he broke his leg, though, yet?
He's month to month now, so I'm going to say that's got to be broken.
Nico Hischier, Klingberg, Andrew Ladd, Thomas Hertl, and Brock Besser.
Besser.
Shooter, what do you think of all these injuries?
Honestly, I think it's something that, as a fan, that's awful. I mean, these are people you've paid that, a lot of the names on this list, if you're buying tickets, that's for somebody you want to watch.
And Austin Matthews just got back, didn't he?
Austin Matthews just started skating again with the team this morning.
And Victor Hedman just came back recently, too. And it's been a terrible year for the NHL.
I think the NHL has to look into, whether it's the preseason's too long.
They'll suspend somebody for 20 games.
Tom Wilson?
Someone tripped over the blue line, suspend him.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of injuries on this list that are, there's some key injuries on this list that might actually change.
Look at the Capitals. Your starting goalie, your first line center, your second line right wing.
Isn't Holby just been trash this year anyways?
Oh, he's been terrible, but Copley hasn't been much better, so.
No, exactly. And I think the biggest one is right now is Nashville, I would say.
Arvidsson, Subban.
They've been playing well. They have a lot to fill it up, but that's a pretty big gap in terms of losing.
I think they've got some good depth, so we'll see if they can...
Losing Subban's not going to affect them for too long.
Kuznetsov, Oshie, Holtby,
I'd argue that the Vasilevskiy injury is probably the biggest one.
I was looking at that today. They have no one.
Louis Domingo is rocking at 3.43 goals against average, save percentage of .887. His best year, he had a save percentage of .914. So, this isn't a good guy. The Lightning have the offense where they can put up 3.5 goals a game.
Yeah.
But when you have to put up 3.5 goals a game, it's a lot different. And my thing is, I wonder how this affects the East. Yeah. If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you have William Nylander sitting on the sidelines and you have any viable trade options, if you think you're going to play nose-to-nose with Tampa Bay all year, this might be your chance to win the division.
To get ahead of them, yeah. Win that easy first round, which Leafs can't seem to get by.
And I think that's going to be this is a big opportunity. If you can have the chance where you can add a piece that propels you to first in that division, even if you think you're going to play nose and nose, when Vasilevskiy's out, usually a fractured foot 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, he's gonna be out, and then when he comes back, he's not going to be back to his A game right away.
He'll need to have some time there to get back up to speed.
It's a dreaded lower body injury, right? Uh-huh. When you suffer a lower body injury during the season, you can't work out, you can't maintain your fitness. It's the toughest thing to overcome. Now, granted, at the same time, there was a year when the LA Kings won the Cup because Jonathan Quick was injured. He missed something about 15 or 20 games, and then he came back. So there is a lot of ways this can go.
But just looking at it, actually, now that I revisit this list in my own head, I think Boston might have the most trouble. Who's on their blue line now?
Torrey Krug's back. They got Krug. They got
McAvoy's hurt right now.
Who?
McAvoy's hurt.
Yeah, he's
He's hurt too.
Hurt. Yeah. He's on IR.
Okay, then they have no one.
No, yeah, they have Torrey Krug and Kampfer.
Who?
Grzelcyk. I don't know. They have a bunch of
Grzelcyk. I mean, yeah, that's Grzelcyk, there's not. Yeah.
No, they have
John Moore, who they just signed from New Jersey for more money than I thought he'd ever be worth.
Yeah,
Jeremy Lauzon's a young guy, but he's it's
no. They're decimated back there, and plus their goaltending situation.
Hey, Halak's doing awesome.
Except for the last game, but yeah, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, they can't complain with their goaltending at all. Halak has stepped up.
But there's an ever time for a bunch of teams to start catching these teams. It's now because...
Yeah, that first line's going to have to pull something out because looking at their depth,
Jake DeBrusse's pretty good.
I think their depth is terrible.
No, Jakob Forsback Carlson, he's pretty good. Yeah. David Backes is a solid fourth liner.
David Krejci is he's an up and down player. I mean, there's times where you think
you don't know where he's coming.
No, exactly. So, that's why we're giving the worst of the week just to all the injuries in general. I know. So that's it. That's worst three of the week. Ending it now. Boom. Okay, whatever. So moving on. I know we kind of touched on this a bit, but what do you guys think of this LA trade? I know we kind of mentioned it originally, how it just doesn't make sense.
For Pittsburgh, it's genius. They get a young player at the same cap hit, actually less of a cap hit than what Hagelin was at.
Yeah, 4 years younger than
than 4 years younger. This have the at the moment, they have the same actually point per game overall in their career, but... Like they got a young player for cheaper. Like it
makes sense for them.
Yeah,
try someone else out with Crosby and see if they can.
It just seems like a random trade, though, eh? It just kind of came out of nowhere. It's like Tanner Pearson for Carl Hagelin.
Well, the same day Rutherford got re-signed for 3 years, he's like, okay, I'm going to make a splash today.
This is one of those deals where, I mean, it could pay off for Pittsburgh, or this could really come back and bite them. I mean, if Tanner Pearson is the player he's showing this year, which I don't think he is. I think he'll have a bounce back.
Yeah, he's not a 1 point in 17 game
exactly. If he starts running shotgun with Malkin or Crosby, he can bounce back. But if he dips to like the percentage he was last year, where you're shooting 8.3%, you're now saddled to this guy for 3 years.
Yeah.
Where Carl Hagelin is a free agent at the end of the year. Maybe LA is looking to flip him at the deadline, but I can't imagine the return for is going to be substantial.
No. This could be bad for their penalty kill as well, because Hagelin was a great penalty killer. So unless Pearson can step up that way, that's taking a hit.
Yeah, I know. Well, I guess I'll find out how it goes, because it's only been like one game into the trade. You don't find out who wins the trade until about like game 20.
Pittsburgh's playing tonight, right?
Yeah, I think
How's Pearson doing? So I'm going to check it out.
I don't know, but just while we're checking out, let's kind of take a look at the next topic, which I know we talked about this a lot, and this is probably the fourth time we've talked about it, but William Nylander. Shooter, I think you have a little conspiracy theory about Willie.
So I think that the biggest issue that is coming around with William Nylander is the valuation. When William Nylander went into the offseason, he thought he was going to get paid like one of the big three. And if you look at teams like Chicago and Pittsburgh, you had Malkin, Crosby, and Kessel. You had Taves, Kane, and Hossa. When they went into the offseason, his agent had a valuation, and that's where they thought they were going to go. But the Leafs signed John Tavares. And now you're no longer looking at William Nylander as that Hossa or Kessel player. You're looking at him as an additional piece. You're looking at someone like Brandon Saad. You're looking at him like Chris Kunitz or James Neal. So he's now an additional piece there. He's not a primary piece to that team. And I don't think his agents had that valuation. Now, if you also look at other things, I mean, William Nylander might be willing to sign for in Toronto at $6.5 million, knowing that he's got $1.5 million in endorsements. But the problem with that comes, if you sign for $6.5 million and this summer Toronto has an opportunity to move you for a right-handed defenseman, you're now in Carolina and you're not making that $8 million you could have gotten on the open market, and you're no longer getting those endorsement deals.
Well, Carolina came out today saying like they haven't even talked to William Nylander's camp or anything like that. I don't know if they even have interest because of...
I think they've said they've showed interest a lot. And who else? Minnesota was showing interest, which if that's a trade and Toronto can get Dumba, I would be 100% on board with that.
No, they're not getting Dumba. Dumba is staying put in Minnesota.
You're probably looking at a Jared Spurgeon type player.
I wouldn't do that.
And that's not a trade I would make. I mean, there's only about 10 teams in the league that have the cap space to add William Nylander if he was looking at for $6.5 million right now.
I think he's looking for $8 million, right?
That's what they're talking about.
I think the Leafs want to sign him for $6.5 million.
And that's the thing. There's not many teams that can fit him in. The Leafs might be better off letting this player sit and looking to deal him at the trade deadline to a team that doesn't need him this year, that he can't play for, getting those assets for a stretch run for the playoffs, and then William Nylander can go on his merry way and play for them next season.
Because they're playing well without Austin Matthews. They're playing well without Nylander, obviously. So it's kind of like, all right, do we actually need this guy in our organization, or can we ship him out?
If Kapanen didn't step up, I would 100% probably guarantee he'd be signed right now. But because Kapanen played so well on that top line, it's basically been like, okay, we can let you...
But if Nylander did sign for the $8 million, that would essentially ruin the Leafs, like, in terms of the future, because they would have so much money locked up front, and they have a back end that's just dribbling along. We have that Morgan Rielly in after that.
I mean, Travis Dermott has some of the best like Corsi numbers this season, and he's playing on the third pair, so there's a lot of room there. Yeah. I mean, the Leafs do have a lot of depth when it comes to young defensemen. Timothy Liljegren, Rasmus Sandin.
Yeah,
there is a lot of talent coming. But, I mean, you could sign William Nylander for $8 million, but you've basically said goodbye to Jake Gardner, and you're going to be looking to move a guy like Patrick Marleau or Nikita Zaitsev.
Well, I think signing Marleau is the kind of the issue right now, because that extra third year goes into the year where Matthews and Marner are going to need to be signed. So, like that, if he wasn't there, I'd probably say they probably would have offered him $7.5 million.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess... It's hard to say, because let's just say they have their first line right now, but they also have Nazem. I think Nazem's making like $5 million.
No, he's making 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5.
He's on probably the best contract in the NHL.
Other than Morgan Rielly, who's I think he's making $5 million a season.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean there's a lot of pieces there. I mean, as somebody who watches a lot of Leafs hockey, the Leafs are weak on the right hand side of the defense, and that's what Boston clogged them up. Boston clogged up the left side and tried to make the right side beat them last year. And, well, we all saw how that ended.
Who? Rob Hainsey?
Is Hainsey right-handed?
Yeah, Hainsey's a left-handed defenseman playing the right side.
Yeah, and Zaitsev's the only right-handed defenseman on the right side.
Ozhiganov is a right-handed defenseman, but he's...
Who?
Ozhiganov. Igor Ozhiganov. But he's a 25-year-old rookie who's...
Not the greatest?
It's hard to transition to the more physical North American game.
Thomas Chabot turned inside out because he was just sitting there fishing. Okay. Well, Thomas Chabot just went through his leg and he's like, all right, thanks for coming out, Ogunajov.
He actually sat the next game because he couldn't find his jock strap. It was that bad.
I'm surprised they traded Connor Carrick. I thought he would be he was small, but he played a little bit of a gritty game and he was right-handed. I thought he was perfect on that bottom pair.
I was a fan of Connor Carrick, but he looked awful in the preseason. He looked like a guy that was scared to lose his job, and because he was scared to lose his job, he lost his job. And now he's not playing in Dallas either.
He's not playing? He have like 5 points in his
first
6 games or something?
He had 5 points, and then he fell right off. And last I saw, he wasn't in the Dallas lineup.
Mm. Yeah. So do you think that William Nylander will play this year for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Yes or no? Shooter.
I think in the perfect world, the Leafs get him signed, but I think that the value of trading William Nylander will eventually outweigh the benefits of bringing him back. So I think closer to December 1st deadline, you're going to see William Nylander dealt.
So if he does sign with Toronto, let's just say, how much does he sign for?
There hasn't been much. If you're listening to the sports media, there hasn't been much wiggle room from his camp. I mean, you're going to have to try to find something in that happy medium, Nikolaj Ehlers, David Pastrnak contract, because anything more than that, and like you said, you're handcuffing yourself long term.
Yeah. How do you sign him for longer than David Pastrnak, or for a higher than David Pastrnak? Everyone's been saying like that's the max they can give him, and he wants more. But how do you give him more than that? Pastrnak's killing him in points.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, their forward depth is pretty good right now. I mean, Toronto it's not an urgency for them to get him signed. So they've got more bargaining power, I guess, for now. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Because the December 1st deadline is coming up fast.
Well, that's it. So, I think he's... It's hard to say. Like, it's a very confusing situation right now. Like, Wayne Gretzky even comments, like, when I was that age, I just wanted to play hockey. It wasn't about the money. And it seems like this kid's all about the money. Like, he doesn't care about playing hockey.
This is the kid whose dad held out a couple times during his career. Yeah. So, I mean...
Yeah.
Sometimes...
His dad's having a major influence.
Sometimes money affects all things for these people.
But what I don't understand is if he sits out an entire year and doesn't get paid, but then, so if he, how do I word this? If he sits out this year to get an $8 million contract for 7 years, but could have signed this year for seven for 8 years, I think it kind of adds up to be the same thing, doesn't it? Like,
I think that this negotiation too, and Kyle Dubas is in a tough situation. This deal is the domino for everything else. They're trying to avoid the Edmonton situation where you sign Connor McDavid and then Leon Draisaitl says, I want 8.5. You're trying to set the bar low with your first free agent so that you can work up with Austin Matthews. But at the same time, if you deal William Nylander, this is your first trade as a general manager.
Yeah.
You can't lose your first trade, or you get that reputation like someone like Pierre Dorion, who people look at as a general manager who makes bad trades. You don't want to be that GM. So there's more to this negotiation than just what kind of money works out to.
I think it was kind of a bad mistake to bring Nylander up for that one first year that burned off a year, because if he didn't get brought up, then he'd be this extra year of still an entry-level deal, and he could have went the same year as Marner and Matthews. It would have been and then it was like a for sure thing that Matthews is getting 12, you're only getting 7.
And I like what his brother's doing. His brother's also holding up from the NHL in general. I don't think he's cracked the lineup this year, but only time will tell when it comes to Willie there. So our last and final topic is just kind of something I thought off on the top of my head. I mean, it kind of goes to Carey Price in general and all goaltending. Is a goaltender ever worth more than $5 or $6 million in the NHL this day? Because they have Carey Price, who's making $10 million, and he's not even a top 10 goalie in the league.
Well, last year, he signed the contract last year, right? In the middle of the season last year. I still think he is the best goalie in the NHL, so you had to give him the most, so it had to be more than Lundqvist, who's making 8.5. So I'm going to say...
But what, even Lundqvist's contract's so outrageous, because the top goaltenders in the NHL right now is like David Ricci or whatever, who plays for Calgary, who's making like $1 million a year.
Yeah.
It's just the parity is so close with goaltenders in the NHL that not like one goalie is better than that goalie's like by 1,050% kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree that you shouldn't be paying him that much, but him being the best goalie in the NHL, I think you had to pay him the most.
But is he the best goalie right now in the NHL?
Not now, but...
That's it, because every year with goaltending, it's all like the top 5 to top 10 in goaltending always changes. It's never the same.
But except for the years that Price was Price. Like, he was...
Yeah, but like I said, that's, you don't need a goalie signed for $10 million because, A, they're not going to finish in the top 10 every single year. And B, it's not worth it, because you can sign a top-end forward for the rest of that money that can fill out your lineup, even a defenseman or something along those lines. Because let's look at the last few Stanley Cups.
Holtby, 6.1.
Yeah, Matt Murray.
Matt Murray, 3.5.
Exactly. And if you look at the top goaltending right now in terms of, let's just go goals against average, for example. Pekka Rene, who's probably the highest on that list.
He's got 7.5.
7.5. Then we got David Ricci, who has goals against out of 1.91. Thomas Greiss, Freddie Anderson, Casey DeSmith, Chad Johnson, Antti Raanta, Halak, Vasilevskiy, Varlamov. Like, all these guys...
They had the highest paid one there, I think, was Varlamov. I think he makes, like, 5.9.
No, Pekka Rene, I think.
Oh, yeah, well, besides highest. Him. Yeah.
But after that, it's like Dubnyk, like it's...
Even Dubnyk, he's 4.6.
Exactly.
And I think you have to look at percentage of cap hit. And that's that's where I think the Montreal Canadiens really made a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, 14% of their cap hit is going to Carey Price. And that's for 8 years. And essentially at the time, they signed him to make sure he was their goalie for 9 more seasons.
Yeah.
He's going to be 38 or 39 when that contract ends. So, I mean, if you're an NHL franchise and you're developing goaltenders properly... You're signing that contract knowing that you're going to be riding $10.5 million on the bench for at least part of that season. I mean, versus that Braden Holtby, when they won the Cup, they were looking at a cap hit of about 8.54%. Anything above 10% for a goaltender, and we're going to see this year, we're going to see how, when it comes to elite goaltenders, it's going to get very interesting this summer if Sergei Bobrovsky doesn't sign in Columbus. Because you're going to have teams...
He's going to ask for a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can ask for what the market allows, and you're going to have teams like Edmonton, where it seems like the Cam Talbot experiment is over. You're going to have the teams like the Islanders, who have Robin Leonard in net for this mm-hmm. season. You're going to have teams that are going to be willing to throw money at a goalie like that. It'll be interesting to see, because I don't think Carey Price would have gotten that money on the open market. I don't think he would have signed. Obviously, he would have had one more year of information, one more year of injuries, but I don't think he would have got $10.5 million.
I think he probably would have got a pretty penny. There was teams at that time that needed a goalie to win now. I don't think Hellebuyck was good yet, so I think Winnipeg would have been like, okay, we want a goalie, we got the team, we want to win now, we're going to bring you in. But, I don't know, it's a tough decision.
Well, yeah, the thing is, like, I think you had the top-paid goalies there, right?
So, yes, we've got Semyon Varlamov is the 10th highest-paid goalie at $5.9 million. And then this is where the list gets kind of interesting to me. You have Tuukka Rask at $7 million in 5th. You've got Corey Crawford at $6 million in 8th. And Corey Schneider at $6 million, who tied for 8th as well.
We're just injury-prone and just eating up cap space right
now. Tuukka Rask has been riding the bench. He had to take some time off this year because he was struggling. Corey Crawford may never play another NHL game again.
I think he's playing right now.
Is he playing right now? Yeah. I thought Corey Crawford was...
No, he came back and he hasn't been elite, but he's been good.
He started okay, but then he's... Yeah, I guess the team maybe...
Yeah, exactly. But like my argument is, okay, so just for example, the 10th best goals save percentage versus the 20th best save percentage, is only 0.011. Like in that, the difference of that is pretty much none. All goalies now are like 6'4". They're all athletic. It's not like the old days where these guys, some of them will come out of shape. There's no Darren Pangs in the NHL anymore. There's nothing like that. These guys are essentially robots, and having someone that's making $3 million versus someone that's making $10 million that's not even in the top like 15 in the league or 20 in the league or anything like that, you're better off spending that money up front or even on your decor to help protect that goalie, because all goalies are athletic now. There's all they do is live and breathe hockey. So they wake up, they work out, they stretch, they throw tennis balls against the wall. They do whatever they got to do. But there's no point in signing a $10 million goalie in the NHL.
No, I in my opinion, I would have traded Price just because his value was so high at that time. They had Charlie Lindgren who was coming up. He was playing great. But I think this was more the fact that Montreal fans love Price and they would have blown a gasket if he was traded away.
Might have been reactionary to the PK Subban.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to look at a team like Boston. I mean, Boston took the same amount of money and are paying less money to employ both Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. And if it wasn't for them going out this summer and getting Halak, they would not be where they are right now, because, I mean, Tuukka has struggled. And I think you're right. I think there's value in going out and getting depth. Even teams like the Florida Panthers, who are finally starting to turn it around, both Roberto Luongo and James Reimer. There is value in having multiple people.
And I think that's still a lower cap hit than Price put together.
Well, everything's just so interchangeable, and when it comes to goaltending too. So just perfect example, Chad Johnson. He only has 10 goals against this year, and he's 32. Probably only signed for a couple years deal.
I think it's only one.
Yeah, 1 year deal, and he's leading the league in goals against. Where you have a Jake Allen on the other hand, is probably making a lot more money than a Chad Johnson, who's letting 42 goals and a save percentage of 0.883 or something like that.
And I think one of the big things you can look at, and if you look at the Stanley Cup in the early 2000s and like 2010s. The Blackhawks let Nikolai Habibulin walk when he was making $6.75 million. And they went with the, not unproven, but younger Antti Niemi, who at the time was an up-and-comer. Yeah, mm-hmm. They won themselves a cup. After Niemi won a cup, they let Niemi walk to San Jose, and they ran with Corey Crawford. If you look at even Tampa Bay had Ben Bishop, and they chose to go with the younger player in Andrei Vasilevskiy. The Pittsburgh Penguins let Marc-Andre Fleury become a Vegas Golden Knight so that they could keep Matt Murray, so they could keep the goaltender who was on a better contract.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of cap management when it comes to the cap age, where I don't think you can afford to pay a goaltender that percentage of your cap, especially if you're looking to be, especially if you're a team that needs depth up front.
Yeah, because a goaltender is essentially like a running back in the NFL. They're a dime a dozen. They have a short shelf life until they start having to move on because the younger guy's coming up who's quicker, has better reaction speed, is bigger, stronger, all that stuff. What do you guys think like the average value should be of a goalie? Like, let's just say we redo Carey Price contract right now, or let's just say a top end goalie. Even though it's actually been kind of been done with Pekka-Rinne's contract, $5 million. I think that's a good start. But what do you think?
I think 6.5 to 7 at max 7. But like Holtby signed 2 years ago, and he was one of the best goalies in the league at that time, and he signed for 6.1.
Coyler, what do you think?
I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable. I also think you need to look at the term as well, you know, how old they are and, you know, how long you're signing them for as well. So you got to, you know, take that into consideration. Well,
that's a big issue with Price's contract. He's going to be basically 40 by the time that thing ends.
Yeah, he's going to come out on crutches and, let's go! And Jean Beliveau. Oh, did he just pass it?
Yeah.
Rip. Shooter, what do you think? What do you think the average, let's just say, solid goaltender who's going to get you some wood should...
I think you have to look at what Winnipeg just did with Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, this is a goaltender who's going to probably contend for the Vezina for a couple of years to come, and he's making 7.76%. So he's making $6 million, let's say about a little over $6 million per season. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the kind of goaltending you're getting. I mean, looking at a guy like Frederik Andersen at Toronto making $5 million a season. Yeah. I mean, granted, there's a lot of contracts in the NHL that have been signed where you get lucky. You sign a guy early on and you get more than he's worth. But
look at Kadri.
Connor Hellebuyck for 6 years at 6.1, sign me up.
And also he's, 25 now?
Yeah.
So you have him locked up for the prime of his career and when he's going to be the most effective too.
Is Hellebuyck even that old?
He's 25. Yeah. So the thing with what I'm trying to kind of state at is like the prime time to sign a goalie for a long term deal,
like 25.
Is between the ages of, I would say, 23 to 26. After that, if you're offering a long term deal of 6 years, there's no point because unless even Carey Price. I was gonna say unless you're Carey Price, but Carey Price isn't putting up the numbers that a goalie should because they could just use that cap space for different uses for them.
It's hard to say stuff like this though because look at the defense in front of Carey Price. Like there's no one there helping him. So who knows when Weber comes back, that might be the boost of shot blocking that one extra shot makes that difference that it's blocked and it might go in. Like, having that core in front of you is great. Like who's a team with a great defense?
Why do you think like Thomas Greiss has a great core in front of him right now?
I think it's better than Montreal's.
I think the one thing to look at goaltending, too, is goaltending is the one position in the NHL that's changed the most.
Yeah.
It's the one position where they've made the most changes. We're not trying to make forwards' pads smaller, but we are trying to make goalies' pads smaller.
Yeah.
So when you have a goaltender like Carey Price who's grown up in a certain size pad, and now you're saying, hey, Carey, over the next 8 years, they're going to get smaller every second year.
Yeah.
Playing that role becomes harder and harder. And like you said, signing a goalie between 23 and 26 for term, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you're signing a goalie who's on the wrong side of 30 for term, you're looking at a goalie who you don't know what the game's going to be. Someone's already alluded to the fact that goalies have gotten bigger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And goalies will continue to get bigger. We're drafting bigger goalies year over year. But you can't make a goalie bigger, especially when they're making the pad smaller.
Well, that's exactly it. Like the only I guess exception to this whole thing is I think Rene. I don't know how old Rene is. Is he like
36?
36. Like he's up there. Craig Anderson's up there. So there are the exceptions where, but they're only signed for two years, 2-1 year, all that stuff.
But I think you could put up a goals against average of 3 playing behind Josi, Ekholm, Subban.
Well, that's just it. Like if you put Price behind that defense core, who knows? Price might be back to Carey Price.
Mm-hmm. Well, Price isn't even in the top 10 in terms of shots against. I'm just trying to find him on the list here. He's 23rd.
But I'd like to see his shots against per game because I think that's a different stat than overall shots against because you're going to get some goalies who've played more games, and I don't think Carey's played.
And I want to see the quality of the shots because the Caps got a shot on from the other end of the ice last night, so that counts as a shot. But it wasn't a prime scoring shot. Maybe Montreal lets them all in from the key.
Well, he does have 12 games played. So he's up there in the higher end of the league in terms of starts. So I don't know. I just personally don't see any value signing a goalie for that much.
But I think we can all agree if Mark Bergevin could go back right now, he would have probably tried to look at dealing Carey Price mm-hmm. to a team like St. Louis for...
We're talking about Bergevin. He'd do it again.
He would do... He would actually do it more.
$20 million. I up that. How much does McDavid make? Yeah, well...
The NHL probably had to rein it back because he was over the cap allowed.
Exactly. All right, so that's going to wrap up the podcast. So I just want to thank everyone for listening to the 8th podcast of In the Wheelhouse. Don't forget to follow us on iTunes. I believe we're on Google Play. Is that correct?
Google Play, yeah.
Are we in Spotify yet?
No, we are not, but we're on SoundCloud.
SoundCloud, all right. You can always listen to the podcast on our website at www.wheelhousehockey.org. Follow on Facebook, Twitter. We're going to start firing up the YouTube a bit more soon. We have Instagram. We got everything. So In the Wheelhouse out. You guys have a great night.